Welcome to this week's episode of the Career Confidence Podcast, where I sit down with the absolutely incredible Krithika Hansen. Now, wow, what a story she has for us all today. This story is just a perfect example of what believing in yourself does, overcoming imposter syndrome, saying yes, overcoming challenges. Her story is full of inspiration, wisdom, and showcases what is possible when we really do go after our dreams. So I really hope that you enjoy today's episode. I came away from it feeling incredibly inspired and empowered to take charge of my own life and my own career. So hope you enjoy. And as always, please reach out. Let me know what your biggest takeaway was. And if you have a few moments now, please leave a review. It really helps to get this podcast out there to as many people as possible so we can all benefit from the wisdom that these incredible guests share. So enjoy today's episode. Krithika, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am delighted to have you on today. Can we begin, as I always love to begin, with an intro into who you are and your personal career journey? Because I've heard it before, which is why I wanted to get you on the podcast, because it's incredibly inspiring. So over to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Georgie. I'm so happy to be here. So my story begins, I grew up in India, born in India, raised there, and then moved to America when I was about 10 years old. And I did all my education in the States. And I suppose my working career, if I really look back and think about it, actually started when I was 11 years old and I got my first job doing a paper route. So you can imagine, you know, the bicycle, the basket, the paper. That was exactly how it played out. And that was my very first job. And from there, I did lots of jobs as I got through high school and university. And my very first job was in Massachusetts, was in Boston, and I was in a buyer training program. So I got to do fashion, which was so much fun when you're 21 and you don't really know what you're doing. But I think that if I look back on that role, whilst it was a great learning experience and I learned lots around the value of relationships, I think the biggest learning for me in that role was living to your values and how when your values don't align, work can be deeply unfulfilling. And so that was probably one of the biggest lessons. And so I left and went to my next role, which was working, updating myself, you know, pre-2000. And that was a telecommunications company. There was a global company. So it was my foray into a global organization. And that was the kind of role where you just say yes. And if someone asks you to do something, you say yes. And the opportunities are endless. So I think that was a really big learning for me in that role. And so about a year into that job, my boss said to me, look, you know, I want you to do this big product rollout. You should put your hat in the ring. And it's based in the UK office. So go speak to the head of EMEA and ask and tell him that you really want this job and that we are supporting you from head office. And I said to him, I've never done a product rollout. Like, what is that? What do those words even mean? And he said, go talk to these people and figure out what that looks like. I went, okay, all right. So I went and spoke to a few people. I made the phone call and the head of EMEA said to me, all right, happy for you to come across. I've heard you're the kind of person that rolls up their sleeves and just gets on and does work. So come on over. And I went to the UK office. I went to London. And about 4 months into that stint there, and again, I was young and single and I thought, well, all right, I have nothing to lose. Let's do this. He said to me, look, our Spain office really wants this work. And therefore, if you want the role, you've got to go to Spain. I went, all right, okay? And he said, oh, but here's a catch. He said, you've got to learn Catalan. And I, okay, I said, I don't speak a word of Spanish, you know, other than, you know, hola. And, you know, that was pretty much it, to be honest. And so I called the head of the Spain office and I said, look, I understand that this is where this role's going to be. I'm really interested. And he said, well, you've got to apply. And I went, what do you mean I've got to apply? Like, you brought me over to the UK to do the job. Why aren't I coming? And he said, no, you don't know the language. And there's somebody here on the ground who knows what to do and speaks the language. And I was like, okay. I said, well, what if I can learn the language? Would you give me a shot? And he said, okay. He goes, but you've got 6 weeks. And I thought, all right, okay, game on. We're doing this. And I thought, no. And the other thing he said, oh, but you know, this guy, he's very good. He knows what he's doing. And I thought, that's great. But I'm also good and I want to have a go at this. And if I don't try, I will never know. And so this was before Duolingo and any of the resources that we have at our fingertips these days. And I found somebody in London, in Reading, actually, who helped me learn the language. And I trained like there was no tomorrow. And I thought, I am going to get this job. I am not going to allow somebody to say to me that they're not going to get it. I don't know where it came from, but I was just so driven and determined to get the job. And so I went for the interview and I did it in fluent Catalan. And he didn't have a choice but to give me the job. You know, it was one of those scenarios. And I think he didn't want to do it, but it was a very reluctant offer. But I got it. And I remember the head of EMEA said to me, now listen to me. Humility is a very important factor here. So, and you are going to need the other guy to do this job because it is a massive piece of work and you need as many people on the team as possible. You know, where you are, you're not, you know, you will need to know how to work with people. So humility, just remember humility. And if you ever feel like you're stuck, you call me and we'll, he said, and I will talk to you through it. So looking back, I had some wonderful allies and support, which was fantastic. And I got the job, moved to Barcelona and had the most amazing experience, you know, on so many levels, so many levels. So after about 18 months of doing that, rolling it out and having a very successful rollout, traveled all around Europe, Africa, to do this work. It wasn't without its challenges, but that's okay. You know, you have to learn when you're working with different cultures, how it plays out. And so I, thought, all right, what am I going to do next? And so I expected that I would either end up in London, which was the headquarters for Europe, or I figured I'd go back to Boston, which, you know, not bad options in the scheme of countries and cities to live in. And so while we were trying to contemplate and work out what I was going to do next, a colleague of mine that I had worked with when I did the product rollout, had got a job at Siemens in Singapore. And he said to me, look, I've got a marketing manager role. Would you like to come to Singapore? And I said to him, okay, but okay, hang on, where is Singapore? I have to figure, you know, I just didn't even think of where it was at that time. I was like, okay, sure, let's do it. Again, single, no commitments. You know, you got to say yes to opportunities when they come your way. And when I was speaking to him, I said, you know, I don't have any experience being a marketing manager. You know that I've been at this level and the level you're asking is like, you know, two or three levels above. You sure that I can do this? And he said, no, absolutely. I want you to come. He said, I think it'll be really good for you. I think it'll be really good for you to be in a role where the stretch will be very, very real. And I thought, I feel like I was pretty stretched in Spain, but okay, all right, let's do this. Let's go to Singapore. And so I I went to Singapore, and my goodness, it was a baptism of fire kind of role. And I thought, all right, Krithika, you're not a quitter. You figure out how to navigate what's going on, and work out who are your helpers. So find your helpers. And because I just remembered the advice I had received along the way, and I thought, all right, who are my helpers? And so Singapore being Singapore, which is a beautiful melting pot, you know, people are very helpful. Like, everyone's transient and everyone's trying to figure it out. So you couldn't be in a better place when you're trying to navigate. And so it was one of those, all right, I'll talk to you. I'm trying to do this. How do I do this? And I think some of the lessons there was the culture of what I had experienced in Europe is a very different culture. And being a female and in Singapore, it's very multicultural. But there is a pecking order, you know, like in many societies on how people are treated in society. And so I think Singapore was really an eye-opening experience for me, because in many ways, I was a woman of color, of American background, living in an Asian country, and, you know, doing a role where I think a lot of people thought, what is she doing in there? You know, why is she in there? And so I felt I had to constantly, I suppose, prove myself at each step, and to say, I know you want to put me in this box, but actually, I need you to broaden the box, because I need to take up more space, and that's how it needs to work. It wasn't an easy job. It wasn't an easy transition, but I think what I learned really was finding your helpers, working with the leaders. And whilst we made so many mistakes, the team and I think our ability to say, look, we're really sorry, we tried something, how do we work together to fix it? Or can you, before I start something, can you actually just help me understand what the success factors are? Who do I need to get tick off and approval from? Because being a German company, you know, there were lots of rules and regulations and policies, and you really had to tick the box on lots of things before you put something out. And being in a marketing role, everything is going externally. So there was a lot more scrutiny on what was going on. So I did that role for about 3 years. And at the end of 3 years, I thought, wow, you know, I did it. We did some great work. And I think for me, the biggest sign that I had done a really good job was I got a call from the global head of marketing in the Munich office. And he said to me, he said, I'd like you to come to Munich. You've really done a phenomenal job. It's not to say you didn't make mistakes. You made lots of mistakes and you irritated a few people along the way. But you know what? You learned from it. We could see it, and we want you to come to Munich and join us at headquarters. And I thought, okay, you know, I feel really good. Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. But I had met my husband, and he was moving to Melbourne. So I said to him, "Well, that's great. I love the offer. By any chance, could you pick another M city?" And not Munich? And is there an opportunity in Melbourne? And unfortunately, at the time, there wasn't. So I left and I moved to Melbourne. And that's where I think for me, a big career shift happened, where I was applying for jobs. I was applying for so many jobs. This is over 20 years ago. And I just wasn't getting anywhere. So in the marketing space, project management, products, nothing. And I thought, what is going on? Like, why am I? I mean, I appreciate we were entering into the GFC. So perhaps, you know, the economy wasn't where it needed to be. But it was just a really interesting response when you apply for so many jobs, you at least get something. And so it was really a strange experience. And it took me a number of years to understand. I didn't understand it in the moment, but it took me a little while, and I thought, okay. After about I think it was about 4 months of applying for jobs, and it was a lot of jobs. I still have the spreadsheet from that day when I was tracking all the jobs and that I'd applied for. I went for an interview, and it was a Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock, and I went for the interview and met who is now a dear friend and a mentor, Liz. And Liz, I think she spoke more than I did. And I walked out of the interview, and my husband had come, or my fiance at the time, come to pick me up. And he goes, "What do you think about the job? What is it?" I went, "I have no idea. I have no idea what the job was." I said, "But she was a really lovely lady, and I really connected with her. And you know what? If I get the job, I'd love to work with her." And I just left it at that. And then on Monday, she called me and offered me the job. And so this was working at Coles Myer back when it was called Coles Myer back then. And one of the best jobs I've ever had, you know, if I look at my whole career, probably one of the best jobs. And I think for me, there were a number of things. It was the first job where I fell into people and culture and leadership and organizational development. And I didn't know what any of these things were, but I fell into it, and I worked with some phenomenal people who appreciated my enthusiasm when I said to them, "What are you doing? And how are you doing that? And can I learn from you? And can you teach me?" And just the generosity that people showed was extraordinary. And, you know, to this day, some of the people from there are still my dearest friends. So, you know, there's something about a magic of a place when you get the right people together to do great work. From there, it was a consulting. So consulting into Coles, I thought, you know what, I need to go learn what it's like to be on the other side. And that's when I started my career into professional services and took on internal roles in the people and culture teams. And that's when a connection and a passion and a desire for what does leadership need to look like? What does a culture need to look like? What's the role of change in all of this? How do you help people adapt and grow? And how do I, when I interact with somebody, how do I help the person be a better version of themselves? Because that's what became clear to me as I did this work. The reason I get out of bed is so that I can create an environment and a workplace and a role and all the other things that enable somebody to be better than they are yesterday so they can be better tomorrow. So for me, going through those roles and spending time in a professional services environment, which is a phenomenal training ground in how you navigate relationships, how you navigate partnerships, how you navigate leadership, courage was a word that came into my mind on a regular basis, risk-taking. And it was at that workplace where I got feedback where one of the partners said to me, "Oh, Krithika, you really like to push it to the edge, don't you? Like right to the edge where there's no space whatsoever." And initially I was like, "What is he talking about? Like, what does that mean?" And then I think it's a compliment. I'm going to take it as a compliment. You know, if I look back at the work that we did and the team and I did in those organizations, you know, we pushed everything to the edge. We wanted to have a great culture. We wanted leadership to play an active role. We wanted to help the partnership achieve the outcomes they wanted. And we worked really hard to do that. And now, you know, if I look at where I am, it's again, a very different industry, superannuation, highly regulated, a very big layer on governance and risk, compliance. What are you doing? It's profit to members. So really thinking long-term, you know, of all the organizations, everyone talks about long-term, but boy, this is really long-term. This is, you know, all the way into a person's, what their future is going to look like. And so again, a different way of operating and being. But I think through all of this, I think the work I did in the marketing world, which is where I started my career, and then bringing it across to the people and culture space, so many transferable skills, so many ways of of doing things and connecting people. A lot of those principles have carried me forward.
Your story is just so incredible. Like, I remember the first time you told me it, and I literally was just like hanging on your every word. And I was thinking at one point when you were saying, like, I mean, there's just so much here. Like, can we just talk about the first and foremost, the biggest sort of standout for me in all of this, and there's so many, is the fact that you learned a whole other language in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, most people can't even sit down and learn it in 6 years, let alone 6 weeks. Yeah. Like, I just find that absolutely fascinating. Like, you are literally an advert for Nike that just says, just do it. Like, yeah. Seriously, like, that should be your tagline on LinkedIn, I swear. Yeah. But can we just sort of go back to that moment? Because there's so many moments I want to run through, but when you said that to me the first time, I remember sort of walking away being like, how did you do that? Because I can imagine you're still trying to do your day job, plus you're learning a whole new language. Like, where did you find the strength, the focus, the drive? Where have you reflected on that to find out where that does come from? Because it's fascinating to me.
I think for me, growing up in the States and in Massachusetts in particular, a lot of the times I was the first. So going into not primary, but going to the middle school and the high school years, I remember I walked into the school and I was the first Indian kid. And people would just look at me and go, who is she? And she's a bit strange. She's got an unusual name that I can't say. And, you know, and when you're those ages, it's very easy to be a target. If you're not accepted straight away, you can often be a target of the teasing and the bullying and all innocent, you know, kids, it's just, they don't know. And so you're different and therefore there must be something wrong with you. And so I think, for me, it started from if I look back, it's that point where I knew if I wanted to belong and be accepted, I needed to work out a way that I could be, I suppose, helpful or useful or just get things done, or I just found there were just these clues that came. And I, you know, when at that age, I couldn't have articulated it to you, but I think as I look back on it and I look at my actions and how involved I got in things, it was one of those, hey, you can't ignore me, because when I join a group, I'm here to help you. I'm here to be a part of something, and together we can get to an outcome. So I think I basically helped people see that I actually wasn't very different from them. Yes, I had a different name, and yes, I had a different skin color, but at the end of the day, we actually had more similarities than differences. So I think for me, my way of connecting with people was getting involved, was how it worked out. And so I was always the person, if something needed to be done, people would call me and go, oh, you'll do it. So can you join this? Can you join that? I remember my mom saying to me, how much are we driving you around? It was like, you know, I think my parents just thought they were my personal chauffeurs for a long time. And going into university, when I think about, in some things, the States was more progressed in terms of, especially in Massachusetts on the East Coast, there was a lot around women can do more. Women are capable just as men. And so in my university, we were 50-50. It was a 50-50 class in a lot of the lectures that I went to. It didn't matter what your name was or what you look like. If you wanted to have a go, there was a space for you for the most part, you know, unless you're talking about the elite sporting teams or, you know, those were slightly different. But if you wanted to say, hey, I want to have a go at that particular internship because that'll give me the skills for this, you had an equal chance. And so in my mind, I think because I'd always found a way to get the equal chance. When this opportunity came up, and then it was almost like, hang on a minute, are you putting a barrier? Like, is this a real barrier? It was very useful to know the language. Don't get me wrong. It actually made my stay in Barcelona so much better because I knew it. But initially I was like, are you just putting up a barrier? And thankfully people far smarter than me at that time, said to me, it's not a barrier. It's a cultural element. They want to help you feel like you can belong. And they also want to know how badly do you want it. So I think because I had always had the opportunities, I think for me, I just didn't think that was not an option. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so I just got in there and I thought, right, I've got to learn. And thankfully, I had a very, very patient teacher. And a lot of the words were similar to the Spanish language, and I had done other languages before, so I was able to pick it up. Did I say some silly things in the interview? I'm sure I did. I'm sure, if he said that was pink, I would have said that was blue, or, I'm sure I said silly things because you're still learning the language. But I think it was for me, I showed them that shouldn't be a barrier and that I am capable and that you should, take a chance on me. So I think it was more that drove me than learning the language.
Absolutely. And I can imagine as the employer, I would want to hire you in a heartbeat, because if you're prepared to do that, then that's the sort of person I want in my business. That's the sort of person I want working with me. So it's just amazing because I think, like, talking about barriers, I think we're very quick to, not all of us, but some of us are very quick to just put those barriers in place, use them as excuses of why we can't do something, why we can't move forward. And you're a prime example of somebody that just said yes, took those risks, believed in herself enough, which I think is powerful, because I think, like, so many people have got this limiting belief of that I couldn't possibly learn a language in 6 weeks. And I believe the human potential is unlimited. And you are walking, talking proof of that, that if you set your mind to something, if you have a goal, you really want to do something, you can make it happen. And it might not be comfortable, but you can make it happen. And we are all in charge of our own lives and our own destiny. And you took charge of that, which is just so inspiring and so powerful. But I want to talk to you now. I mean, you've experienced so many different cultures, which I think is fascinating. And I can imagine has really shaped you as a leader. So what have you learned from working with so many different cultures, and how do you think that's helped you in your current role today in the sort of like people and culture work and role that you do? Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy.
I think what I've learned working with different cultures is, first and foremost, we are all human beings. And I think sometimes we forget that because we might hear the accent, or we might see the person in a particular way. We are shaped by our thinking, our experiences, our biases, and they're all natural human elements that help us in our day-to-day interactions. And I think one of the things for me is very much taking the time to be curious and to learn about who you're working with. So when I got the job and moved to Barcelona, one of the things I did was I sat down with the head of Spain and had a really great conversation with him, where I said, okay, I think we need to put our cards on the table. I don't think I used these words necessarily that long ago, but to the sentiment of, can we be open and transparent? I know I wasn't your first choice. I know you had somebody else, but I really want to make it work and I want to be of value to you and I want to do a really good job. So what are the things that I need to be aware of? How do we need to work together? How do I work with my colleagues? What are the things culturally I need to be aware of? And, you know, and thankfully I had some advice from the head of EMEA who said to me, humility, and therefore you need to think about how that plays out. So you don't know all the answers. And I remember him saying to me, he goes, don't be American about this. And I'm like, what does that mean? He goes, you don't know all the answers. So go and ask lots and lots of questions. And so I think for me, that lesson really stuck in my mind. And even when I moved to Singapore, you know, I would always make the effort to understand what it is that the work we're trying to do, who are we doing it for, why are we doing it? You know, what does success look like for the individuals? Because, you know, everything's connected. That's the other thing I learned, is everything is connected in some way, shape or form. And if I think about my work today, first and foremost is, who are the human beings in the organization? And what is the experience that we want to create for them, where they feel like, this is a place I want to come and work at, and this is a place where I want to give my best, and this is a place where I want to stay. And how do we create that? And I'm very, very lucky, I think, in many ways, because if I think about my current organization, apart from, you know, you get the cultures when you work in different countries, but Telstra Super is one of the most diverse places I've ever worked in. The nationalities, the backgrounds, the experiences, the age demographic, you know, you it's so varied. And every day I think, I am so glad I had my other experiences, because I feel like my connection, I can connect in different ways. And I could never have predicted that, Georgie, could not have even planned it. But when you're in it, you just think, okay, yes, I have some lessons from there, but let's test that it's still valid, because that was over 20 years ago. So let's actually test that we're in Australia, we're in Australian societal norms, we're in an industry that is very different. So how do you actually need to think about the cultural nuances, whether somebody was born in Melbourne, grew up in Melbourne, their whole life is here, compared to somebody who immigrated from another country and is doing a different kind of work. So how do you actually help to create those connections, not only for myself, but for anyone who's interacting with them?
I love what you said there, because it's just so powerful and it's so simple, but it's just such an important reminder about we're all humans.
Really?
And I think this is, for somewhere along the track, humanity has been lost a little bit, sometimes I feel, which is really quite sad. And look, I think that is just such an important piece to remember, that you don't know what someone's gone through in their life. We've all had different experiences. We've all had different things happen to us. And everyone's just here trying to figure this thing called life out, try to do our best. We've all gone through failures. We've all gone through successes. And it's what makes us human. And I think that's just such an important piece to remember. But you said something then about, obviously, your organization at Telstra Super being a really diverse place to work. And I think, honestly, the best places to work are the most diverse, diversity of thought, gender, everything. So how have you gone about, and really, I guess you've been a really big part of shaping that. What do you look like? Because I think that's, and look for, because so many of my clients, and I obviously work in recruitment, as you know, that want to create this culture of diversity, but also this culture of belonging and inclusion, right? Because diversity is one thing, but it's something you could get so much diversity in the organization, but if there's no belonging, there's no inclusion, it's never going to work. So how have you gone about really shaping this culture to what it is today and really creating that sort of successful work environment, I guess?
I think fundamentally it comes down to leadership. I really believe it comes down to leadership, because I've worked in organizations where it doesn't matter what interesting initiatives, how cool they are, you know, cost, it doesn't matter. If you don't have leadership wanting to do this for their teams, for their environments, for the organizations, it's just not going to work. And, you know, it doesn't matter how much I bang my head against the wall, you know, trying to bring up initiatives, trying to create an inclusive place, trying to create a place of belonging. If the leader doesn't want to do it, it just does not happen. And I think what I have at Telstra Super, and it hasn't been by accident. There's been deliberate action in how the teams get formed and how the leaders are in different roles. And it comes from the board, it comes from the CEO, the exec team, and then it cascades. And so when I put forward initiatives at Telstra Super, refreshingly, you don't have to justify your business case. I mean, yes, you have to talk about the dollars and the impacts on that, but the why and what is it going to do for your culture and what is it going to do for the people? That's already a given and it's already accepted. And I think I really have to commend the leadership of starting from the board, execs, you know, people leaders. There's this commonality that has come through. And I think, you know, and I don't know if it's something unique in the super industry, but that profit to member ethos, you know, where you are thinking about what is it that you're doing? How are you supporting? How are you helping somebody have a better future than they imagined? You know, it's something that I think potentially also translates back into the workplace because the focus on the members is so important, and they're a very diverse set of members that we have. You know, so I think how do you interact with them? How do you connect with them? And then that in turn also translates to, well, how do you interact internally? Because you're trying to get to an outcome, you're trying to get the job done for your member. So, I would say leadership is probably the number one trait for me, and I think curiosity would be the other one. Is very much the willingness to learn, ask questions, share, and be okay with the fact that we have a different opinion on something. Because I've seen it play out on topics that could be very divisive, on because people's beliefs are so deep one way, and then somebody else's their belief is another way, and it could be very divisive. But I have seen where leaders have gone, I really appreciate that's how you feel about it. I want you to know that this is how I feel about it, and I would love your support regardless, because it's actually something really deep and personal for me. And this thing of, I support you as a colleague, but you also need to understand where I'm coming from. So I think, you know, watching how it's played out, I would say those are some of the things that I think if we get right, will make a world of difference.
I love what you said there as well. I think we sometimes need to find that common ground. And even when we have conflicting opinions sometimes, which is normal, that's being human, right? We've all had different experiences, but there'll always be something in common there. And I guess if we can focus more on that to start with, like, what do we both agree on? Versus what do we both disagree on? I think then you can sort of start to really have that culture of inclusivity of like, well, we all agree on this. We all want the best for our members. We all want this, So what does that then look like? And that whole diversity of thought and opinion is what makes such a great company. So I absolutely agree with you. I think it has to come from the top and then it gets filtered down, which is so powerful. But look, one of the questions I wanted to ask you sort of before we wrap up the conversation today, but one I think that's really important to ask you is that, look, there's so much change happening in the world right now, and people are fearful. People are scared jobs for the future, what that looks like, the children's future. How do you sort of see your role evolving as, like, you know, really sort of looking after a culture and helping people navigate this, like in terms of like the whole people and culture piece? Where do you see your role and how do you sort of see this all fitting in as we transition into this whole new decade?
Oh, There's just so much out there that I think people are navigating. And, you know, when I think about, there's no perfect way of doing things. But I think in the role of that I do, I think being clear on why you do it, I think is really important. And that can change and evolve as it goes. So, you know, we have the emergence of AI. There's some phenomenal technology out there. There is, to your point, the economy is a really interesting point right now. There's mental health. There's lots of things that people are experiencing in that space. And I just think, first and foremost, I grapple with these things every day, but I think first and foremost, I have to say to myself, you got to give yourself some grace and you got to give yourself some patience, because you're not going to solve it tomorrow. These are deep adaptive challenges with no clear solution. And so how do you really get deep in understanding your organization, what the organization's looking to achieve? What is the culture like? What will be accepted? What will be rejected? What's your skill and capability of the people around you to help you do the work, whatever that looks like? And getting really understanding those things. And how do you then connect and communicate all of that to people? So, you know, like I said, we're not going to solve this tomorrow. But when I think about thinking of those four factors, if I bring those four together, there's something there for me around as a group of people, a team, an organization. We will eventually solve it. It may not be the way you picture it today, but if you can think about how you pull the right levers, I think there's a way you can get to solving it in a way that makes sense for your context, for your culture. It may not fit any other organization. You know, I often think some of the things I've done at Telstra Super, I think, gosh, that would never have worked in the other organization I worked in. Just never would have worked. And this vice versa. Some of the things we did there would never work here. And that's okay. That's okay. But I think our jobs in the people and culture space, and especially the more senior you are, I think it's really understanding what is it that the objectives are, what is it that the organization's trying to get to, what's the culture, what's going to work, what's not going to work, what's the risk appetite, really getting clear on those things. And then how do you then navigate that with the connection and capability and communication to bring it all together? So it's not an easy answer to what you've asked. But I think this is how I'm thinking about it is let's get on the balcony. Let's have a look at this holistically. And then let's work out how do we get the helpers? How do we pull the right people? And how do we have that deep connection and relationships to then ultimately do what you want to do?
Yeah, it all comes down to those relationships as well, having the right people in the organization. And I guess that curiosity piece as well. I really tried to listen to people, identify what are you afraid of? What's not working? What is working? And how can we navigate through all this change? So it's going to be a very interesting world over the next 5 years, that's for sure. But look, final question, because I always love to sort of really dive deep into people's mindsets. And I think your mindset is fascinating to me as well, because you're very adaptable. You're not afraid to say yes, take some risks. But do you have any sort of like practices, or have you had any practices in the past or routines that really help you navigate challenges, difficult conversations, like anything that you do on a regular basis that helps you really show up as your best self as well?
I think as I've gotten older, I've actually had learned to slow down to go fast. And what I mean by that is I have found if I don't take the time to take care of myself physically, mentally, spiritually, I actually am not my best to anybody else. And that includes my family. I really am not, I'm not my best. And when I was younger, I thought everything had to be at a pace. I thought you had to go, 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 because, you know, that's what I saw everybody do, was go, 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 go. And what I've learned is going slow to go fast is the way to go. So I have my usual rituals that I follow every day, which is around the exercise and some the mindfulness meditation. And I also, I'm a big fan of journaling. I just like to write my thoughts, and it's not anything complicated. You know, it's literally something is bothering me. And I just find if I put it on paper, for some reason it comes out and you go, oh, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Or I hadn't thought about these three things or whatever it might be. So I find those practices have really become habit over the many years. And I think the other thing is just you don't have to solve everything right now, because sometimes they, when someone comes to you, sometimes they just want you to listen to them. And so it's actually slowing down to go, what is it that you're really wanting me to do? What is it that will be helpful here? And it's not always solving. And I think sometimes it, when you get to exec levels, you almost think, well, I've got to fix that. I've got to get that done. You know, that's, you know, it's just a natural way of behaving. And so I've really had to think about, well, what is it that I need to do here? And sometimes the answer is nothing. And that's okay. And that's perfectly okay.
I was smiling as you were saying that, because I do all of those things. And but also, it's really interesting. Like, I mean, it's not like I have to do it every single day, but I certainly notice the days. Maybe if I've skipped a few days and my mind gets busy. Meditation, journaling are two things. I see them as like brushing my teeth. They're like, you know, mental hygiene for me. And then physical exercise. Mm-hmm. I am quite an energetic person, so I need an outlet for all of that energy. So that really helps me, I guess, slow down and be more present within my body. But look, final question, but I promise I could chat to you all day. You've got so much knowledge. But I just, I know there's a lot of people listening to this podcast that are in leadership roles that lead people and teams. And final piece, so what in your opinion do you think like is a really important trait that leaders should really try and possess or work on? Any sort of characteristic, is it a skill that you think that's what a really good leader looks like, or that particular thing that they do is what I really think to make people stand out? Anything spring to mind?
Gosh, there's so many. I'm trying to distill it to one.
You can have more than one, I promise. But I had to ask you this question because I know so many phenomenal leaders listen to this podcast.
I think someone who, when you talk to them, they make you feel like you're the only person in the world and you are the most important thing in that moment. I have such admiration for leaders who can do that. And they show you how much they really care for you. And when you do that, I find the quality of the conversations change significantly. I find they're much more truthful. And you really get the gems to help you be better. And, you know, it is something that I feel like I'm cultivating each and every day. I am nowhere at the, you know, at the finish line. But I really admire people who have that beautiful skill of just making you feel like you are so important for that moment that they're speaking to you.
Completely agree. And I have a saying, I think the biggest gift in this busy world that you can give somebody is your full attention. And I think that's an art that is quickly being lost because people are so quick to pick up their phones, check an email, multitask when they're talking to somebody. And people can tell instantly, whether it's via a phone call, a Teams video, an in-person meeting, if you're paying attention or not. And I think you are absolutely bang on with that answer. So I completely agree. But this has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time. Where can I send people to find out more about you, to connect? Where do you hang out the most?
Probably LinkedIn is a good place to start. And I'm very happy to to catch up and have conversations. I love the face-to-face human connection. It's probably my most favorite way of connecting, but I appreciate in today's world, LinkedIn is a good place to begin.
Well, we will make sure that we put all of the links to your LinkedIn profile below. So please go and connect. And thank you so much. Honestly, this was incredible. I have learned so much personally from you, and you're a true inspiration of somebody that, you know, takes risks, says yes, not afraid to really push themselves out of their comfort zone as well. I speak about a lot on this podcast. I think confidence comes from courage, and you have an incredible amount of that. So thank you so much. Thank you for coming on the podcast today. I've absolutely loved it.
Oh, thank you, Georgie. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you. Thank you.